Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
The central element of these corporate visa programs is the ability to never have to consider U.S. talent.
We're joined by former IT worker Donna Conroy to talk about the way U.S. corporations are able to hold visas, hiring H-1Bs, citizens from abroad who get hired for U.S. job openings. President Obama is diffusing some voter anger over the bank bailout with his announcement that he will provide TARP bailout money to community banks so they might in turn lend to small businesses and individuals.
New jobs start with small businesses. These are the companies that begin in basements and garages when an entrepreneur takes a chance on his dream, or a worker decides it's time she becomes her own boss.
When larger banking companies accepted the TARP money, the intent was that they lend to small businesses and the public. However, they've not done so. And it's yet another indication that they're increasingly rejecting all assumptions about a social contract, tying them to governments and societies that help them earn their profits. According to Donna Conroy, corporations have little, if any, loyalty to U.S. workers now, despite big incentives they may have received over the years. The question is, what do taxpayers get from the corporations they may have helped build, later on helped bail out, only to find themselves training their replacements, who happen to be from China, India, or other countries? Donna Conroy, first of all, let me welcome you.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Just tell us your reason for taking up this particular issue. I know it's personal for you.
The reason that we took up this issue is that I found myself unable to get work despite being a highly skilled IT professional. And what I saw around me was that outsourcing was a factor in my ability to get work. So we created Bright Future Jobs expressly to organize IT professionals to both transform these corporate visa programs that actually allow corporations to recruit abroad and never consider U.S. talent for their U.S. job openings. These corporate visa programs are absolutely crucial. They're the underpinning of the outsourcing of white-collar jobs. So despite most experienced politicos recommending that we could never get relief from these corporate visa programs, we were able to get Senator Durbin to introduce legislation that will actually stop the outsourcing of white-collar jobs and end the despicable practice of corporations forcing us to train our foreign replacements. These are provisions that are now included in comprehensive immigration reform, and they will transform the circumstances of our lives.
That's Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois. He's joined in this bill, though, by Republican Chuck Grassley. Just talk about how this would all apply to workers. Are these guest workers? What's their status?
The first thing I want to clarify, these are not guest workers. These are corporate visas. They're not guest worker visas. There's a subtle difference because the ownership of the visa is with the corporation. It's the corporate lobbyists that actually designed these programs, not for the U.S. economy or for citizens from abroad. What's developed in the IT industry is that we have offshore labor contractors. They go to a major corporation like Pfizer in Connecticut, and they propose to take over IT departments, HR departments, different departments within the organization. They give them one flat fee. And the only way they can actually execute this work is by outsourcing the jobs to India, usually that's the corporation, and they must place their Indian staff through these corporate visa programs.
So when we're hearing about a company that has outsourced a lot of their work, their manufacturing and what have you, but they have a Connecticut base, then you're saying the jobs that politicians are arguing and trying to save might actually belong to people from other countries?
Right. The only way outsourcing works is if the offshoring company can place their staff members on a client's site. They can't, most Americans believe that you can just send data over to, say, India, and the work can be done in the same way as having it done here. It's not true, and it never has been. That's why these corporate visa programs are so critical to offshoring. What they need is they need a ratio of one person here in the United States to every two or three people in India. Even their SEC filings state that they require these corporate visa programs to deliver work to their customers. So when we explained to Senator Durbin how this worked, what they realized is that these are just labor contractors. They're not providing value to the U.S. economy. They're not creating jobs. They're actually displacing Americans from the jobs that they actually have. The crucial point here is that in order for outsourcing companies to outsource jobs to India, these jobs are actually rubber banded by these corporate visa programs. If these corporate visa programs are no longer in place, then those jobs will literally rubber band back to the United States. That's why we're calling these provisions essentially America's jobs bill.
When you're talking about an outsourcing company, is this a middleman or is this within the umbrella of these multinational corporations?
This is really a middleman or a subcontractor.
Well, what makes an Indian employee more attractive than an American employee, especially if you have to have people here at home base to make this all work anyway?
Well, it's not the attractiveness of a citizen from abroad. It's actually the repulsion of the American workforce and the social contract that we've had for, what, maybe 50 years between the U.S. workforce and corporations. The object here is to essentially smash the social contract. What I mean by that is the belief and the design of a corporation to create permanent jobs with benefits and career mobility. Technology firms mocked major corporations because these corporations, 30 and 40 years ago, believed in the social contract. That is the central issue that the technology companies have essentially pushed forward into the American employment arena, is the idea that corporations will never produce permanent jobs for us with career mobility. The central element of these corporate visa programs is the ability to never have to consider U.S. talent. Now, just to give you an idea, Senator Durbin's provisions that are now included in comprehensive immigration reform will force these corporations to consider U.S. talent first before recruiting abroad. In addition, because these corporations have been able to recruit abroad and never consider us? Two things have happened. Number one, we actually have a profound segregation within the IT industry. Many of these corporations have 90% citizens from abroad. That shows you that these companies never considered local talent. One of the provisions will essentially cut off these corporations from these programs if their staff is more than 50% visa workers. The other thing that these corporate visa programs have created is a tremendous oversupply of experienced, highly skilled IT professionals and new recent college graduates that we as a nation have paid so dearly to educate. So the combination of outsourcing and legal employment discrimination is creating a tremendous oversupply of technical professionals that we may never be able to utilize. Our long-term goal is actually to establish U.S. policies that address this oversupply of technical talent. So the real issue that Americans should be asking when they think of science and technology is, now that we have tech talent, what are we going to do with it?
As we said at the beginning of the program, politicians are talking, especially right now, about the question of American workers. How can we keep companies from leaving to save American jobs? And we see conservatives arguing higher taxes will chase these companies away. And then there are also arguments being made that we have to tolerate this new kind of ruthlessness, you know, the firing of American workers who have in many cases put years into their jobs so that they can benefit from retirement packages. We're hearing that this ruthlessness, though, is to keep American businesses solvent or competitive internationally. Those are the things we're hearing about. Just take those kinds of arguments on, Donna.
Number one, we need to understand that we're being lied to. These corporations have to do business here in the United States. They lie to us and tell us that they can outsource these top-dollar white-collar jobs. And that is only true if they have the government subsidy of these corporate visa programs. Congress has been lied to about these corporate visa programs. The tech industry has lied to the American public and the Congress, stating that, A, these programs are only for when they can't find Americans to fill these job openings, and that if they don't keep these programs, they'll outsource more jobs. That's a lie, and Congress found that out because Bright Future Jobs actually exposed federal government documents that say it is legal to both bypass qualified Americans with these programs, and it's actually legal to displace Americans with these programs. That's why we have such good provisions in the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Program. I think we need to educate ourselves about how important the American economy is to technology, to services, and things like that. The next thing is we need to get savvy and shape U.S. laws that benefit us. And that's what we're doing concerning these corporate visa programs. But it's deeper than that. These corporations have on their agenda to smash this social contract. And we need to stand up for ourselves and shape the circumstances of our lives and our children's future by reestablishing that social contract and making these corporations accountable to us. I think the technology professionals have a unique role to play in this, because many times it is our talent that they utilize to actually smash the social contract. So, for instance, these mortgage-backed securities, it was technical talent that deceived and cheated and manipulated U.S. consumers. By professionalizing the IT industry, making us accountable to a code of ethics, I think in combination with political organizing to shape our laws, is not only will it create a short-term return, but it'll transform our nation for the future.
They're described as a new breed here in Connecticut. CEO of United Technologies, Louis Chenevert, has, quote, enthusiasm for efficiency and doing work in low-cost emerging economies, such as China and India. That, according to the Hartford Current's Eric Gershon. But companies within this umbrella company, mega company of UTC, have been eliminating thousands of jobs and a 15,000 job layoff in 2009. So while stockholders are told this will help boost profits and free market advocates are told, you know, we can't do anything about this, we're seeing these companies leave. Now, this includes Connecticut defense giant Pratt & Whitney, which is closing offices here, opening an aircraft maintenance factory in Shanghai. Can you just respond to someone who's got the point of view of, you know, UTC's Louis Chenevert?
You hit the nail on the head. It's a new breed of corporate CEO, and the battle lines need to be drawn between the U.S. workforce and this new breed. They need to be taught a lesson about the power and the ingenuity and the strength of the U.S. workforce. They want to be able to do business here, but not to employ us. That's the bottom line. It's not about profit. It's about innovating the social contract. Sadly, they have used, you know, technical talent, marketing, PR. They've used essentially the white-collar professionals to unbraid this social contract that we have spent 30 years weaving. And in order for them to do this, they have innovated U.S. law rather than actually innovating products and services. They have turned all their talent toward the federal government and manipulating laws that circumvent and destroy, as I said, this social contract. If you look at corporations in the EU, these corporations are making profits, but they're also upholding, expanding the social contract, and they're actually proud of the social contract. There's a stark difference between the CEOs in the European Union and the CEOs here in the United States. And these CEOs, there are very few. And we have a mass of Americans who can stand up against these tiny, tiny elites who are trying to tell us that they are the creators of this economy, when in fact we know that we are the creators of this economy.
Donna, I was wondering about another part of the social contract, let's say. It may seem like a strange example, but in Connecticut, the franchises Dunkin' Donuts all of a sudden were minus the tip jars for workers. And it's been a while now, but they took away the tip jars. I believe they gave these, you know, low wage or minimum wage workers a dime an hour in its place. But they replaced the tip jars with collection boxes for, you know, the favorite charities of the franchise or the corporation. So the workers created that wealth through a relationship that they formed with the people they were serving. Does Dunkin' Donuts own that, or is that really, in fact, a separate social contract based on traditions and culture? And does Dunkin' Donuts really own that wealth, or do they have a right to take it? So I know a lot of these workers have suffered. In one case recently, I heard about a worker who lost his job because he accepted a tip from someone who obviously wanted to give it to him. I mean, I thought about that as it also extends to these American corporations, where in many cases, you know, you've seen generations work at these plants. They've passed on their expertise to the people who've come after them. Were it not for their expertise and training, you know, maybe jet engines wouldn't have been built safely. That's part of the social contract you're talking about too, isn't it?
Exactly. And I thought that that was a brilliant perception about the, you know, unraveling of the social contract between customers and, you know, the employees at Dunkin' Donuts. You're right. At all levels, from all angles, corporations, instead of innovating, you know, products and services, they've taken talent and directed it at innovating state, local, and federal laws to unravel the social contract. This example that you use of Dunkin' Donuts is a brilliantly perceptive analysis of how that unraveling of the social contract impacts our daily lives.
It sort of trickled down, didn't it? I mean, it's a whole perspective now amongst these CEOs that the bottom line is they have to keep moving those profits up on Wall Street and in their bank accounts, working with these multinational banks. They're the ones that helped crash the economy. But the focus is on them, right? Not on the health of workers who, they had a real crisis in terms of affording to live in America. The cost of living increases that they were asking for. American workers, I think, were looked at as selfish when they joined unions and demanded higher wages. How else were they going to send their kids to college for technical work? They just couldn't afford the ever-rising costs here.
Yeah, it's on all fronts. And a lot of people get overwhelmed by these corporate visa programs. They have funny names, H1L1, you know. That's not the issue. The issue is that technology corporations have innovated U.S. federal law in order to bypass U.S. talent so that they can smash the social contract. That's their particular unique role. But you're right, we see it in Dunkin' Donuts, we see it in colleges, you know, we see it when we have to pay for college, we see it in the attack against unions. It is multifaceted, and Bright Future Jobs is focusing on this one angle, which is the outsourcing of top-dollar white-collar jobs and the bypassing of U.S. technical talent. That's our contribution to this whole fight to reestablish the social contract and create permanent jobs with benefits and a career path. That's what American opportunity meant 30 years ago. And American techies are going to restore American opportunity to the nation as a whole when we fight for these things.
You know, the United States reached a point of saturation for weapons in general. I mean, we have so many nuclear weapons, so many submarines, so many helicopters, and et cetera. But aren't they just really buying time? I mean, they may get wealthy selling these things abroad, but at some point that market's going to bottom out. There's only so many weapons people want. And they're not building U.S. cities, they're building Chinese and Indian cities. So as far as the U.S. economy benefiting from any profits they make on Wall Street, it sounds like a cycle that the majority of Americans wind up losing in anyway. I mean, the only winners seem to be the ones whose stock goes up, and it goes up for now. Who knows where it winds up?
I agree. I think this whole green local movement, even though it may not be 100% political, actually addresses the illogic of quote-unquote globalism. So your example, the defense industry is in and of itself illogical unless we're in a permanent state of war. So whether this defense industry is here in the United States or any other location, it's a distortion of an authentic economy where you're producing a product or a service that, you know, some economy, your own economy or, you know, another economy wants. You know, this tiny new breed of tech CEOs have lost their minds. And they're creating inauthentic economies that need the support of local laws to have them propped up. So the outsourcing of American jobs to India, again, is rubber banded by U.S. domestic laws. These laws were written by tech lobbyists, passed by an American Congress for American companies to destroy the social relationship that had been in America for 50 years. This is bizarre on its face. It's just illogical. And that's where I think we have the upper hand. They have taken their craziness to the point where only the insane would support this.
We'll hear more from Donna Conroy next time, and you can go to the website brightfuturejobs.com, now a celebration of Black History Month, from Pacifica's archive.
The Pacifica Radio Archive celebrates Black History Month by honoring the voices of a revolution. From the Montgomery bus boycott to the Black Power movement to the fight for reparations, Pacifica was there.
I really feel grateful that what has happened here is something I said in front of Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C. in 1965. After I had sent President Johnson a telegram telling him to bring the people home from the Dominican Republic and Vietnam, and I said to President Johnson at that time, if this society of yours is a great society, God knows I would hate to live in a bad one. But at that time we felt very alone, because when we start saying the war is wrong in Vietnam, well, people looked at us like we were something out of space. But when they talked about the other day of the Gallup poll being 58% of the people against the war in Vietnam, then we see if you are right, you have to stand on that principle, and if it's necessary to die on the principle, because I am sick of the racist war in Vietnam when we don't have justice in the United States.
The airwaves of Pacifica radio stations included some of the most important African-American thinkers, artists, poets, writers, speakers, and activists of the 20th century. Listen to these voices and you'll hear their dreams and demands for the political, social, and economic restructuring of America. To find out more, visit our website at pacificaradioarchives.org.
Winnie Mandela,
Angela Davis,
Dorothy Dandridge.
These are the things that we go through just trying to be treated like a human being.
That, of course, was the voice of Fannie Lou Hamer. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program produced in Storrs, Connecticut. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion. TalkNationRadio@gmail.com if you'd like to write to us.